Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Good evening. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. Beyond the Darkness is underway. It's Friday night. We're wrapping up another week already, Tim. Hard to believe, isn't it?
It is.
This has been a great week. A lot of great guests. We'll be back again with you guys next week, Monday, with Supernatural News and Parashare. But remember, this Saturday, I'm hosting Coast to Coast AM, the best in overnight talk radio, Saturday from midnight till 4 a.m. To find stations and times in your area, check out coasttocoastam.com/stations, or you can always listen to it live from the station that I record from, knsiradio.com. That's knsiradio.com, right here in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Tonight's show, Tim, is being brought to you by Audible, and this is pretty cool. Audible is one of our new advertisers on the show, and I use it all the time. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible, where you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/darkness. That's audibletrial.com/darkness. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We want to thank Audible for joining the Beyond the Darkness family. Also, we want to welcome Casper Mattresses, which is an amazing mattress. They've got the most awards of the decade. That's right. The Casper is now the most awarded mattress of the decade. I own one. Tim's got one coming. Mm-hmm. He'll have it in the next week or so here. But we will also give you a special. To receive $50 towards the purchase of any mattress, go to CasperTrial.com/darkness. Again, that's CasperTrial.com/darkness and save $50 towards any mattress purchase. So make sure you take advantage of that and visit all of our advertisers. Tonight, we've got a great show lined up for you. One of my all-time favorite guests. She's been with us since the beginning of Darkness Radio and Beyond the Darkness. She's making her first visit here to the new show, and we couldn't be happier. Our good friend from Chicago. She is an author. She is a researcher. She is a parapsychologist, a historian. And she's the founder of Chicago Hauntings, Inc., and the host of PBS's The Hauntings of Chicago. She also hosts one of the premier paranormal conferences in the United States at the Chicago Paracon. She's here with us this evening, Ursula Bielski. Ursula, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, you guys. So great to be here. I'm so proud of you doing this great show. I see it's really popular.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been a nice transition and a good change, and we're having a lot of fun with it. And I knew as soon as we got going, we want to have you on the show. First of all, let's make the quick mention. You've got the new paranormal conference going to be out in October in Chicago. Tell us about some of the people that are going to be there this year, aside from me and Tim.
Aside from you and Tim, we have coming back with us Jeff Belanger, who just got back from climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. And he was not with us last year, but he was always with us. And we are not only having Jeff back this year after missing him last year, but we will also be returning to the Portage Theater, where we had our conference for so many years, one of the most beautiful theaters in Chicago, which has always been such a great time. So Jeff is coming back. Obviously, he's the writer and location scout for Ghost Adventures, the head of ghostvillage.com, the author of many, many, many books about the paranormal. And so we're thrilled to have him with us. We're going to have parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach come with us, who's going to talk to us about parapsychology for ghost hunters using parapsychological methods in our ghost hunting. We're going to have two celebrities from Ghost Hunters International, We're going to have Joe Chin with us and Scott Tepperman. We're also going to have Jim O'Rear, the great horror filmmaker, will be with us. And also Brian Cano from Haunted Collector, along with many other local talents. We've got Sam Maranto, who's the head of Illinois MUFON, will be with us. We'll have Bigfoot researcher, Jay Bachochin. So a lot of variety with our guests, more than 60 vendors, and also, of course, our big costume bash on Saturday night, ghost hunts, ghost tours, the whole gamut of stuff in Chicago.
Right. And tell them where this big costume party is going to be taking place.
It's going to be taking place right at the Portage Theater, which is a very different place than it was when we had our conferences before. It was just basically a movie theater where they had some special events. It has been completely outfitted now for huge concerts and shows. And so they've got this state-of-the-art sound system, and we're going to have, as part of the party, we will be having a performance by one of the greatest illusionists in America, Ron Fitzgerald, who is recommended by all the greatest magicians in the country. So he's actually going to be performing for us.
Wow.
On stage at the Portage. So it's going to be a very cool event.
And how do people get tickets and join us for that event?
They can go right to chicagoghosts.com. And there's a link right there that'll take you to the ticket page. Well, although there's a link that'll take you to the conference section of the website that'll have all the information, the schedules, the speakers, the vendors, and then they can go ahead and purchase tickets. And we also, of course, have a room block at the nearby Comfort Suites at O'Hare, which is 5 minutes away from O'Hare Airport. So there's no excuse for anyone to not fly in and be with us.
Yeah, it's an amazing time. We've been coming, I think I've been there almost every year since you started with the conferences, and it's always a great time. I always bring new talks, and you've always got great guests joining in, so I look forward to seeing you for that. But we brought you on. You're working on a new book, and this fascinates me. So you were kind enough to come in, even though the book won't be available till a little bit later on this year. It's called The Ghost in You, Poltergeists, Electrokinesis, and Phantasms of the Living. Talk to me a little bit about this, because a lot of people are not even familiar with I mean, they're familiar with the words, but not necessarily the meanings
right.
of this. Phantasms, that's one that has always intrigued me. It sounds like a great spooky kind of word. What exactly is a phantasm?
A phantasm is basically the ghost of a living person. And there's so many instances of this that have come down through the ages. And I think I think every investigator and many lay people I know that are not involved in paranormal investigation have had these kinds of experiences where you see someone or you hear someone who is nowhere near where you are. And it's like it's a ghost of someone that's still alive, very much alive. And these encounters were extensively documented by one of the great parapsychologists, Edmund Gurney, who wrote a book called Phantasms of the Living. And he was active during the 19th century. And his book of documentation of these cases, I mean, you could use it as a doorstop, a huge thousands and thousands of cases of people having these experiences. And the first one that this is one of the things that got me interested in paranormal investigation, because when I was a very little girl, one of the first stories I ever heard was of my Uncle Will, who was my mom's brother, who fought in World War II. And he was, you know, on the boat to Japan or on the boat to Europe several days before Pearl Harbor was even bombed. And he never came home. He was gone for 4 years. And one night after he had been gone, you know, so many years, his mom and dad woke up in their bedroom and saw him standing at the foot of the bed dressed in uniform. And they got a telegram from the War Department, of course, several days later saying that he had died several hours after they saw him in their bedroom. So that was one of the first, exposures that I had to the paranormal, was this incident that so many of my relatives told, you know, many, many years after it occurred. So that has always been something interesting to me. As far as poltergeists, that was another thing that was always so fascinating to me. I remember when I was in high school hearing about the case of Tina Rush, who I know you're familiar with, a 14-year-old in Columbus, Ohio, who had all of these things that started to happen in her house. She was a foster child. She had a very tumultuous childhood. And, there are these crazy things that happened in the house, including one incident where almost a dozen eggs somehow were transported through one by one through the closed refrigerator door. You know, clocks spinning back and forth, fruit being thrown through the house. And it attracted the attention of the great parapsychologist, now passed away, William Roll, who really kind of literally wrote the book on what we understand about the poltergeist today. You know, most researchers believe that the poltergeist comes from us, you know, usually from either a teenage child, an adolescent who has a lot of latent energy, someone who's going through a lot of tumultuous activity, or someone who is bereaved and has a lot of sort of unfinished thoughts and anxious thoughts. So that was so fascinating to me. Tina Rush, you know, she grew up, she ended up being charged with murder of her little daughter. And it seems like everyone knows that she did not kill her daughter, but it was probably her boyfriend that did. But she went to prison for it. And she pled guilty, and she's in prison today. And many researchers believe that because of the disbelief of what was happening in the house, people charging her with fraud because of the activities in the house, that she came to believe that nothing that she would say would matter. People wouldn't believe anything she said, and that she pled guilty pretty much because she was charged with fraud because of the poltergeist activity around her when she was an adolescent. So it's, you know, one of the most extreme cases, of course, in the annals of the poltergeist, but it really sets the standard for what we think of as poltergeist activity today. And as far as electrokinesis, you know, this is something that more and more I find that people experience kind of this phenomenon where the more stressed out certain people are, they seem to have an effect on things around them. And I first kind of saw this in my ex-husband. You know, when he would get very angry, he would literally walk into the house and pictures would fall off the wall or fuses would blow. The lights would go out. Light bulbs would burn out. And we would make fun of it, of course, you know, saying like, oh, my God, here comes Dave, like, you know, nail everything down. But it seems to be something that is not uncommon, really. And there's a name for it. Streetlight interferers, or sliders is what they call them. And it comes from the idea that there are many people who will literally walk by street lamps and they'll go out in the street. But it's this electrical phenomenon, and it's like poltergeist activity, but it lasts sometimes, it seems, throughout the person's entire life. And so it's not like the traditional poltergeist case, which is usually lasts for maybe a week, several weeks, maybe a few months at the most, and then stops. It seems to be some sort of electrical, maybe malfunction or gift, however right. You want to look at it.
Actually, I dated a woman
that goes on.
I dated a woman who she could not wear a wristwatch because it would stop when she wore it. And when she would be near computers, you'd start getting that weird flipping on the computer monitor,
right.
And it would overload all the time. And I thought she was pulling my leg about this until I started watching her around these things, and electronics would freak out around her constantly. And it would depend on how mellow she was or agitated she might get, depending
right.
on how violently the different things might act around her, lights flickering. It was really a strange experience to kind of witness, because again, that sounds like the makings of a good horror movie, right? You've got Carrie,
exactly.
Stephen King's Carrie, where she's got this kind of telekinesis and able to move stuff, but you've got this ability. Sometimes the electrical energy being thrown off by a person is so effective that it can manipulate electronics around them.
Yeah, it's so true. Even I know dear friend and colleague of ours, Christina Rake, she talks about this all the time. I see on social media that she said, like, yeah, I walked in a room and all the clocks stopped again, you know. And it's a part of that evidence that I think that, you know, some we have yet to even begin to understand the way that our own electricity interacts with the things around us. And it's something that, you know, parapsychologists are working on, but there's so few of them. And I think it's a case where there's so much of this that goes on, but it's not part of how we understand the world to work. So we don't look for it. We don't recognize it as that. And we just kind of automatically, unconsciously dismiss these things when they happen, or we don't put it together. We don't put two and two together because it's not something that's within what our culture would expect.
Now, the idea, too, when you were talking a little bit earlier about phantasms of the living, some people have referred to these as doppelgangers, and they believe that these are evil forces, right? Because if it's taking on your visage, then it must be something nefarious. But there are many cases where I think we haunt ourselves on quite a few occasions. And I know you and I have had talks off air where sometimes you'll hear your own voice in the home, or you hear a loved one call out your name. And I you know, you go upstairs and there's nobody there. And does that necessarily make it a negative, or is it just that you're in the environment where you're always in and imprinting things, and from time to time that is going to clash with what's going on?
Absolutely. And this is something that I've experienced in our home. As you know, I have two teenage daughters. I've seen on several occasions one or another of my daughters, you know, when I've been just in my office or in my bedroom, I've seen them walk across the door, and they just didn't. They're not even here. They're in another room. They didn't come in. Sometimes you realize that because they walk in a minute later. They walk by the same door a minute later. And it's very odd. I've experienced this many times during my life. When my dad passed away in 1986, it was very strange. It was my mother, my older brother, and myself. I was 19 years old at the time. My brother and I were both attending college in the Chicago suburbs. And it was common for us to come home on the weekend. Well, a couple of weeks after my dad passed away, I had come home for the weekend and my brother had stayed at school. And this was before cell phones. This was, you know, back in like 1987. And my mother and I were sitting in the living room watching television. It was this old Victorian house that my mom lives in. And we had talked to my brother on the phone. He had called us, you know, landline, of course. He was really sad about my dad. He was having a very hard time. He wished he had come home with me for the weekend. He was very lonely. We were really all having a tough time. Hung up the phone with him and went back to watching television. And 5 minutes later, we heard him come in through the front door. You know, outside door, rickety old house. We heard all the keys turn in the door. We heard the door open and slam shut. All the locks turn, the chain go across the door. We heard the interior door, the weather stripping slide against the carpet and close, and that lock turn, and we heard someone run up the stairs. We were in full view of the staircase from the foyer. No one went up the stairs. Obviously, someone had come in the house. I actually turned to my mom and said, "Oh, he's home," meaning my brother, and realized he was 50 miles away, and we had just talked to him 5 minutes earlier. Someone had obviously come in the house, and it was him. He came in really fast, which he always did. It was just everything he always did. It just that gut feeling that he came in, and we both knew that someone had, but clearly no one had. And we checked all the doors. Everything was locked. Nothing was disturbed. And my instinct was to run next door and call the police. And my mom, you know, very skeptical, said, "You know what? No one came in the house. Let's just stand here at the foot of the stairs and listen. And if someone's upstairs, you know, if you breathe, the floorboard will creak, so we'll know." And we stood there and listened. And 10 seconds later, we heard the sound of all of, like someone had piled up dozens of boxes and knocked them over. We just heard all this stuff come tumbling down. So we looked at each other, ran next door, called the police. You know, 6 squad cars came and went through the house from the attic to the basement. No one was in the house. Nothing was disturbed upstairs, despite all that ruckus we had heard. And all I could think, you know, I had started studying parapsychology, and all I could think was that it was somehow related to my dad's death, not necessarily him, but, and I've thought this more as the years went by, but that grief that my brother was going through had somehow, you know, transferred itself to our house, and he wanted to be with us. He wanted to be home with us, and that somehow he was. And this was really backed up years later when he, when we were adults, he had joined the military. I was expecting my first daughter, Eva, and I was weeks away from the birth. And my husband was a firefighter at the time. And so when he was gone, I would stay in those last months of the pregnancy at my mom's house. And I was sleeping in my brother's old bedroom upstairs and woke up in the middle of the night because I was woken up by the sound of him in the living room downstairs, as if he was watching television, like laughing at the TV, making comments about what was on the TV, which he always used to do when we were growing up. He was always a very loud TV watcher. And I thought to myself, oh God, this is just what I need for him to be down there making this fuss when I can't sleep as it is because I'm pregnant and everything else. And I must have sat there listening to him awake for a good 20 minutes. And then I realized that he was in England. He was with the Navy and was stationed in Lakenheath in England. And he was nowhere near our house in Chicago. And as soon as I realized that, it stopped. It just completely stopped. And I called him the next day and I talked to him and I said, like, hey, how are you doing? And he said, actually, I'm good. I was having a really difficult time because it's just really rough here and the work that we're doing is really hard. And then I got a surprise because yesterday morning, one of his best friends from high school had showed up unannounced and they had gone out to the pub and that had this great time and they were laughing and talking. And it was turned out to be at the exact same time where I had had this experience in the house. So it's very interesting. When these emotional times happen, some people seem to have some way to connect to loved ones that are far away. They experience it, they pick it up. And I think of course it's so spontaneous. You don't have a chance to try to maybe record the audio or the visual.
Right.
But I wonder if you could. I wonder if it's an actual objective thing that you could record and not just a psychic thing that one person is picking up on.
There are so many aspects of parapsychology and the paranormal that are still, you know, they've been discussing it. They've been researching it for 150 years. But I don't know that, in your opinion, have we really come that much further in really understanding what's going on with these type of experiences? Or do you think we're still just kind of playing on the same even field? It's not really escalating in the understanding.
No, it really doesn't. And, you know, you look at the actual parapsychological community, which is so small, especially in this country, which is bizarre because, you know, the first parapsychology lab was started in this country. I mean, parapsychology was named and started in this country at Duke University. So it's very strange that we're the country that's the most inhospitable to the paranormal. And it's a shame because we have so many resources in our scientific community in this country, but there's no emphasis on that. In fact, it seems that the emphasis is on discrediting that. I mean, there have been moments, especially in the last few years, you know, in the field of physics, you know, when we hear something in the news, like physicists have discovered that it's possible for something to be in two places at one time. We're like, yes, you know, but there doesn't seem to be that connection that goes through to these things that we experience, or it's used to discredit the experiences that people have in this way. I think also it's a shame because there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in parapsychology by the hundreds of thousands of so-called ghost hunters that are out there investigating haunted places and trying to collect evidence of ghosts and haunting. There's not that connection to connect it to parapsychology, to connect it to psychic functioning. There have been so many instances, and this is one of the reasons why I finally wanted to actually start to write this book. Collecting EVP, for example, so many instances using things like the Ovilus, great tool invented by Phil Chappell. So many instances where, you know, in the Ovilus, I'm sure the listeners are familiar with it, but it's a device that has a 1,000 or 2,000 word dictionary in it. And each word is lined up with a level in the EM field. So the theory is that if the entity is not around, that they can manipulate the energy field to make the device say the words they want to use to talk with us. I've discovered on so many occasions using the Ovilus that it was my own thoughts that turned up on the, you know, the text display.
Right.
You know, something that I was thinking turned up there. And I wonder how much of that is stuff that turns up in what we call ghost hunting, which I know a lot of us have thought for a long time and wondered for a long time, how much of this, the stuff that we call ghosts and hauntings, is actually projections from us, but we're not putting that together. There seems to be a lot of evidence for that, but there's not that connection that I see from ghost hunters to parapsychology. It's that focus on what's outside of us are these entities, people that have passed away, or, you know, the very edge of that. Maybe people are looking at these things as hauntings and things that are left behind, but not so much as the interactions of us with the environment.
Right. And that's something that's been fascinating to me for a long time, watching people use the tools and how they interact with their tools. Some people will call it bonding with their equipment. Mark and Debbie Constantino were a great example of this. They used specific recorders all the time, and they would get extremely good responses. They could hand those recorders to someone standing next to them, and those people would get nothing on the same recorder. You'd hand it back to the Constantinos, and they would immediately start getting recordings because they had come into concert with these pieces of equipment. And I've seen it with tools like the K2 meter, with the Ovilus, the PX devices. It just seems that when you start to get into sync with your own electronics and equipment, then I start to question, which I really appreciate out of Bill Chappell as well, even though he's the inventor of many of these. He does not necessarily buy into the fact that we're talking to dead people. He thinks that it has a lot more to do with our own influences on these particular pieces of equipment that makes them react and interact the way they do.
It's so fascinating. Another place where I've seen this so much, just like what you said, as you know, I've very, very closely connected with research at Bachelor's Grove Cemetery here in Chicago, known as, you know, one of the most haunted places in the world, and has so much phenomena. But, I don't take a lot of photographs just as an investigator. But I have seen Carl Kay, who has the Path to Bachelor's Grove website with Wendy Rowe. He and Wendy have, you know, they will spend 12 hours a day there, like several times a month. And I've watched Carl over the last 4 or 5 years that I've known him and I've been at Bachelor's Grove with him. The photos that he gets at Bachelor's Grove are amazing. And they're photos of all of these phenomena that people talk about there, you know, the Slender Man and the little people and the fairies and the, you know, the shadow figures and the Hat Man, the Vanishing House. You know, he's got photos of that, which I've never seen anyone get.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much to look at. You wonder, you know, I've talked about, is it like you talked about bonding with the equipment? Is he bonding with his equipment? Is it because he has taken, you know, like 80,000 pictures there with the same camera? Is that what's going on? Or is it the bonding with the phenomena? You know, does our psyche have to warm up with that phenomena in order to capture those things with our equipment? One of the very first book I ever read about the paranormal was about another Chicago guy, Ted Sirius, the so-called photographer, who was, you know, this drunk bellhop that worked at the Hilton Hotel on Michigan Avenue. And he had somehow discovered that he was able to imprint images from his mind on Polaroid film. And he was studied for, I don't know, something like a decade by one parapsychologist who actually brought him to Denver, you know, got an apartment for him. And just, it was like his life's work to study this guy who produced these amazing photographs, apparently from his mind. And of course, there's skeptics who say that it's been debunked and he was a fraud and everything else like that. I don't think that's entirely true. But, you know, you could put that camera in anyone else's hand and nothing would happen. But it was that, you know, that camera, he had to use that camera and he had to have a few drinks in him.
Right.
And he had all these certain things that had to be in place in order for him to produce this phenomenon.
Well, that's a lot like the ghost writers out of California that take the Polaroid photographs in their home, and messages will be, it almost looks like smoke or clouds in the middle of their pictures spelling out words. And they have to use Polaroid cameras, and people that have used them, you know, and even brought their own cameras in there, have gotten similar results. And I know that there are ways to fake that, but in this case, there have been some really important, reputable investigators that have gone in there and have found time and time again that they get these messages. And yeah, it's a curious anomaly, right? Is this something that they're imprinting because they're going in with that expectation, or is it occurring outside of their influence?
It's fascinating. You know, I never really used any tools in investigations, and I always called myself more of a paranormal researcher because I never had any luck taking photos or taking videos or collecting EVPs. And a few years ago, I started to work with a very famous EVP researcher, Michael Esposito, who's worked on all sorts of stuff with Robbie Thomas, all sorts of documentaries about the paranormal, huge EVP expert. And I started to see that when I would go places with Michael, and he taught me to record right on directly onto a laptop using Audition or Audacity. And so I started to do that. But I noticed when we would go places together, I would record on my laptop and he'd record on his. And he would get all this amazing EVP, and I get nothing. And then he said, like, let me use your laptop for a few times. And so he would use mine, and I'd use his. And I started to get this amazing EVP at my laptop. Well, as it turns out, as I'm sure a lot of people know, Michael is a very powerful medium. And I really came to believe that it was just the fact that he was literally touching and using my laptop that charged it, you know, charged it up, really.
Right. I get where you're going. Right. Sure.
Yeah. I really honestly believe that. And to this day, and I haven't worked with him for a few years now, and to this day, that same laptop that he had his hands on, I use and get amazing EVP where I never, ever got any.
But again, is that Dumbo's feather, right?
Right.
Do you believe that because he influenced you to believe that, you know, his interaction with it opened that up? That's what's so fascinating to me about the whole aspect of things like poltergeist and electrokinesis, telekinesis, is the idea of how much influence do we really have? We need to take a break. But when we come back, let's talk about this. Is there a common thread found between poltergeist, electrokinesis, phantasms of the living that we can follow? Do we see that people with this type of personality, this type of blood type, this type of brain activity are more interactive or seem to have more ability towards this? We're going to discuss that and more. We have Ursula Bielski, our guest this evening, as we discuss her upcoming book, The Ghost in You, Poltergeists, Electrokinesis, and Phantasms of the Living. Coming up next, we've got something great. Audible, an Amazon company, presents today's Theater of the Mind. From deep in the archives, Martin Constantine tells his real story of the doppelganger.
It started like you would expect. Little things at first. My keys would go missing and end up in the mailbox. The TV would turn on and off by itself. The subtle sounds of scratching from inside the walls. Now, of course, I could chalk it up to my mistakes or perhaps a nearby neighbor with the same TV using his remote and affecting my set. And the scratching, well, could just be mice or squirrels, some kind of pest living in our walls. I was never a believer in the paranormal. That was just fun stuff to watch at the theater. But I never gave it a second thought or consideration, believing it could ever be real. At the time, I lived with my wife and 15-year-old daughter, Kia. I never thought to ask them if they were noticing the strange things going on at the house. I mean, we'd lived there for 17 years and never had any kind of problem at all. But this was different. I would come down in the morning to fix some coffee and find every cabinet wide open, napkins thrown all over the floor. Our tabletop, which was usually adorned with a lace runner down the middle, a bowl filled with fake fruit, and two sterling candlesticks, one at each end, would be removed from the table and strewn about the room in a haphazard fashion. I finally decided to address my wife and daughter. Both made the same claim that they had no idea what was going on and that they did not have a hand in it. I started to get this sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. Was someone sneaking around inside our house while we slept at night? It didn't happen often, but a few times a month. And we lived in a sleepy little town where a good portion of the time we never even bothered to lock our doors. I changed all the locks that day, and I got an inexpensive security system and set it up. Placed them by the front and back door, the kitchen, and outside my daughter's room to see if perhaps she was sleepwalking or, even worse, sneaking some boy into her room. Now, of course, nothing happened for over a month, until the night I was startled awake by the sounds of cabinets banging. I clicked the small monitor on next to my bed and pulled up the video feed from the kitchen. It crackled to life, and the sound of static let out an electric hum as the picture came into view. The doors of the cabinets were slowly banging back and forth, all of them in different speeds and strengths, like 12 unseen sets of hands were working each door on their own. I sat there silent, only the sound of my shallow, short breaths surrounded me. The doors slowly came to a stop and softly closed. I was stunned, trying to make sense of what I just witnessed, when like a shockwave, the cabinets all burst open simultaneously. I pulled back in horror from the small video screen, and that's when my bed lurched and settled with a bang. I thought to myself, I must have reacted more violently than I thought, and that jerking back from the monitor made me move the bed. Then the bed began a slow tremor banging, almost clacking on the floor. Then two violent slams and stopped. My wife sat straight up in bed and in a hushed whisper said,
"What just happened? Is this an earthquake?"
"Yes," I thought. "It has to be an earthquake. And the cabinets moving must have been the opening stages of the coming quake." That made sense. It had to make sense. Until the muted screams of my daughter Kia tore the night open from two rooms away. Her bed was now thumping and bumping. I galloped down the hall and threw open the door. My wife and I stopped short, watching our daughter flailing about, screaming as her bed bucked and banged like a wild bull. I approached the bed, terrified, but the need to protect my daughter was slightly, and I mean slightly, more important at that moment, and I hated myself for feeling that way. I reached for her, and the bed slammed to the ground, right onto my left foot. I let out with a howl. "Ow!" Dropped to the floor, writhing in pain, clutching my foot, holding back the myriad of filthy words my mind was lacing together and crying out in my head. My wife ran to my daughter. She yanked her off the bed. The two slipped to the floor to huddle by me and my throbbing foot. We barely had a chance to breathe and collect ourselves when the sound of scratching surrounded us, like it was coming from under the floor. Scratching, scratching, scratching. Soft at first, then more furious. It seemed to circle us on the floor, then made its way under the bed. And that's when I saw the Ouija board jutting out from under the corner of the bed. What the hell? I felt like I was on a hidden camera show. This had to be a prank. I was living out every cheesy horror movie cliche I'd ever seen. The room was filled with the sounds of whispers now, like being surrounded by an audience at a school play waiting for the show to begin. Whispers all around us, and the sound of heavy footsteps coming down the hall. We huddled together, my wife's sobs mixing with my daughter's soft cries, rounded out by my heavy, panicked breathing. We could hear the footsteps bounding down the hall toward the stairs to the kitchen, and the whispers stopped as quickly as they had begun. We slowly stood, and I pointed to the bedroom. As quietly as we could, in this creaky, noisy old house, we made our way to the master bedroom, and I closed the door, locking the handle, and sliding my heavy old dresser up against the door. I reached down and picked up the monitor to look into the kitchen and see what was making the sounds that we could still hear from inside our room. It sounded like a man, my size, stomping in a tantrum style around downstairs. The monitor lights flickered, and I saw a man move into the kitchen, his head facing down. He seemed dazed as he rubbed his head, and with the back of his hands rubbed his eyes vigorously. When he lowered his hands and turned from his sideways position, I could clearly see his face. My face, looking back at me. It was like I was watching a video replay of myself stumbling around the kitchen in the morning, bleary-eyed and seeking coffee. My wife stood by my side, eyes wide, and she whispered,
Who is that? Why is this happening?
I tried to reassure her by placing my arm around her and pulling her close, but I didn't have an answer. We need to call 911, I mumbled. What was I going to tell them? I was watching myself roam around my kitchen. Ghosts were levitating our beds. I pushed the numbers on the phone. 911. And the dispatcher's voice filled my ear.
911, what is your emergency?
I called and reported that we had an intruder. Something was going on, and we were hidden in our room upstairs. They needed to send someone quick. I hung up and waited for what seemed like forever, until the sound of pounding on our front door. The police were here, so I had to make my way down and open the door for them, not sure what awaited me on my way. I moved as quickly as I could down the hall, down the stairs, and rounded the wall to get through the kitchen and to the door. When I came face to face with myself, I froze. He just smiled, and I saw him open his mouth, and he spoke. Oh, yeah, I remember this. I remember this happening. This is so weird. Then everything went black. I passed out. Woke up in an ambulance, surrounded by my wife and daughter, EMTs, and a police officer taking their statements. They held nothing back, explained every frightening second. That's when he turned to me and said, "Is this what happened, sir?" I nodded. He closed his notebook and walked away. A few minutes later, he approached my wife and slipped her a piece of paper. Once they cleared me and I felt fine to get up and return to my home and assured us no one was in the house, I stood and asked my wife what he handed her. She showed me the slip of paper with a woman's name and number. He told my wife he knew of a woman who dealt with this kind of thing and we should call her and say he sent us. He also told my wife that he removed the Ouija board he found in my daughter's room and warned her against playing with those again. We made the call as soon as we could, and a very lovely lady named Marjorie made her way through our house, clearing each room, burning sage and praying with us. She said the danger had passed, but I would still feel little repercussions of our experiences, and it was okay to be afraid, but realize we were okay now and in control, and she would always be just a phone call away. She said the Ouija board, mixed with my daughter's age and the tension in our home recently, could have been what instigated the whole thing. And she said she'd seen it before, this type of poltergeist activity, but not to worry. We were safe now. I asked about seeing myself. She just smiled and said, "Well, time is a funny thing, but don't be surprised if one day, while making my coffee, I run into a very exasperated version of myself entering the kitchen." She then assured me to just take it in stride and it would pass quickly. So, for now I wait. This is going to be very interesting.
All right, let me break.
Sick guys. Adam.
If there's anyone here, you can speak to me now through this device.
Not 10, man.
How many people are here with me right now? Where exactly are you?
Welcome back to the show. Beyond the Darkness welcomes Audible as one of our new sponsors. I'm a big fan of Audible, Tim. You know, I hit the road a lot.
Yep.
Do a lot of driving throughout the year.
Yep.
And I love to take Audible with me because I can listen. I'm a sci-fi nerd,
mm-hmm.
right? So I get the chance to listen to my Star Trek stories.
Mm-hmm.
The one I've got in right now, I'm listening to the Star Wars Aftermath, Empire's End by Chuck Wendig. It is awesome.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. But I love having the Audible experience because I can take it with me. I don't have to tote the books with me. Mm-hmm. I can make sure that it's running right through my car stereo. I can listen to it or with my headphones while I'm out walking.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awesome way to take the book because truthfully, I know there's a lot of people that like the tactile feel of a book in their hand.
Yeah.
I prefer to listen to the story.
I do too.
It sometimes it opens up my mind more to the experience and plays out like a movie in my brain.
Yep.
So I love using Audible. And as a sponsor for the show, they wanted to make sure that our audience got a chance to take advantage of what they've offered. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from in every genre. Thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindles, Androids, and more than 500 devices. So you can listen anytime, anywhere, and you can find a great list of all of the books that are available. And our podcast, again, is being brought to you today, as was Theater of the Mind, by Audible. And you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/darkness. Make sure you use that so they know you heard about it on the best in paranormal talk radio. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. It's audibletrial/darkness to take advantage of that. And one of the other sponsors that's joined up, and I'm really excited about this. I've had a Casper bed for quite a while. I was having a hard time sleeping. My bed sucked. I got tired of it. I got roped into an expensive California King mattress about 6 years ago. Top of the line. I spent almost, I think it was around $1,600 when I bought this bed.
Yikes.
Because I was told how great it was. And I laid on it for about 5 minutes at the store.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it felt great. I thought this is going to be good. But I've noticed in the last 2-3 years, I wake up repeatedly. I can't get comfortable. There's a rut in my bed. Yes, that says I might need to lose a few pounds. But it also tells me that this bed was not made to the quality it was promised to be.
You got the old hammock going.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
So Casper is where I reached out. And I told you this has been helping me with my sleeping issues. You're having sleeping issues.
Yeah, I unfortunately have 13 herniated discs that need some help.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is the way to go. Tim's expecting his bed anytime in the next 7 to 10 days.
I can't wait. Yeah. I can't wait. I've heard some great things from you.
Well, and what's great about this, too, is we've got a great working relationship with them. If you've been out shopping for mattresses, you're going to know most mattresses can cost well over $1,500. But Casper mattresses cost between $500 for a twin-size mattress, $600 for a twin XL, $750 for a full-size mattress, $850 for a queen, or $950 for a California king-size mattress. $950. Tim, that's about $600 less than I paid for my bed that I already have to replace.
It's amazing.
$600 less, and I'm going to get a much better bed. Casper understands that buying a mattress online can have consumers wondering how this is possible. So buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper will offer free delivery and returns within a 100-day period. So you don't have to just lay on the mattress for 10 minutes at a store and make a purchase that you're stuck with.
Mm-hmm.
With this, you buy the bed, bring it home. You get a chance. They'll ship it to you for free. You get a 100-day period to try it out. If you don't like it, they'll pick it back up. It's that simple. Statistically, again, like I said, lying on a bed for 4 minutes in a showroom has no correlation to whether it's right for you. That's why Casper has turned the buying process into a risk-free experience. And Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress that in all reality you spend a third of your life on. And in our case, maybe a half of our life, Tim. I know how we both work.
Two-thirds, Dave.
Yeah,
two-thirds.
They're obsessively engineered mattresses, and they're a great price point. And you get just the right sink in, just the right bounce. Two technologies used in this, latex and memory foam. And they come together for a life well slept instead of a night horribly spent.
Ugh.
So there's a risk-free trial and return policy. So try sleeping on a Casper for just 100 days with free shipping and painless returns. You're going to thank your buddies here at Beyond the Darkness. And here's what I want you to do. I'm going to get you $50 towards any mattress purchased by visiting Casper, that's C-A-S-P-E-R, trial, trial.com/darkness. Make sure you use that exact title in order to get $50 off the purchase of any size mattress. That's CasperTrial.com/darkness. And then use the promo code 50SLEEP, 50SLEEP. I remember that easily because I'm turning 50 this year, Tim.
Oh.
50SLEEP is the special promo code to get the special price on that. Terms and conditions do apply on this. So go check it out. Visit all of our advertisers, because that's going to keep the show going. And I promise you, we pick out the best items to use. These are items that Tim and I hands-on use We pick these companies to work with because we believe in them and we want to share the fun, the wealth, and the great products with you. Now we're back with Ursula Bialski, our guest this evening, the ghost in you, poltergeists, electrokinesis, and phantasms of the living. Ursula is an author. She is also the founder of Chicago Hauntings, Inc., and the host of PBS's The Hauntings of Chicago. If you go to Chicago and you want a premier tour to see all of the amazing haunts of the Windy City, then I couldn't recommend a better tour than working with Ursula and her great team. Check it out at ChicagoHauntings.com. That's ChicagoHauntings.com, and go on these tours. You will love it. They're so informational, educational, and they're creepy. Man, you can have some experiences on these trips. I've had them. It's a great time. Ursula, I before the commercial, I was talking about are there common threads between things like poltergeist and electrokinesis? Do we find that people that have poltergeist activity might have more of an electrokinetic ability or issues? Does one thing beget the other?
It's interesting. It seems that like so many of these aspects of the paranormal, that it's something that doesn't have one thing to pin it down, which is another reason why, you know, normal scientists or mainstream scientists just disregard this activity or these experiences, because there doesn't seem to be, or we haven't found these common threads. For example, you know, when I was growing up, we had a house that, you know, my mom's house that I already talked about, where we had activity going on. When I was young, we would hear footsteps walking up the stairs. And when I got older and started writing my books, I found out that this woman had grown up in our house before my parents bought it. She was confined to the house because she was severely mentally ill. And so she had lived until about 55 years old and rarely left the house. And so I think that's a really good case of just a classic haunting, mm-hmm. where someone goes through the same routine every day, year after year. Their energy is all confined to that house. They die, and somehow there's been sort of a recording made, and it just keeps happening, and we pick up on it. So we kept hearing her going up to bed probably at night, every night, as she did for so many years. So that's probably what that was. You know, after I determined that when I got older, I learned some more things about when we were growing up, which is that my brother had more experiences in the house when we were growing up, whereas my mom and dad and myself would hear these footsteps every night. He would also sometimes hear the piano playing by itself. He would hear noises from the basement. He sometimes saw a form in the house. He would sometimes hear knocking on the windows. So he was tuned in to something else that was going on in the house, whether it was the same thing or it was a different thing, which led me to believe that maybe our house did have, you know, a true ghost in it, where mm-hmm. there was an intelligent entity that was there, that was interacting with him, but not interacting with us for some reason. So as I've, you know, all these years have gone by, I'm almost 50 years old now, I've realized that my brother is more tuned into something, you know, from his phantasm experiences, where I've picked up on him being in the house when he's far away, to him having more experiences in the house where the rest of the family had very limited experiences. He's also had strange experiences with, you know, when I was growing up and I was just scared of ghosts in our house, he was also having experiences where he was having so-called dreams of being abducted by aliens, you know, and we always said like, oh, he has all these nightmares about being abducted by aliens. And I wonder now if he had some other experiences with these other phenomena when we were growing up. So it's odd, you know, my parents and myself and my brother all had these different experiences of the same thing. And that's something that I've seen, is that you can't really determine or understand what kind of experiences someone is going to have. But in doing a lot of research with children, and I wrote a book some years ago about children and the paranormal, by studying, you know, hundreds of children who had experiences when they were little and the way their families reacted to it, that there was definitely a difference in the continuation of their experiences based on whether or not their parents and their other family members criticized the experiences or welcomed them. And then I found out that there is actually a neurological difference in children who have paranormal experiences when they're young, who are encouraged, as opposed to those who are not. So there's actually a different way that our brain develops depending on what's encouraged and what isn't. So I think an answer to your question, sort of, and I know it's very a convoluted answer, but I think there's so many layers of what's going on. And there's so few people looking at those layers, at least so few people that have the ability to understand the different functioning, not only of our own brains, but of the paranormal side of it. You know, there's so few parapsychologists that are working today.
Right.
And I think we really need a lot more people who are aware of the side functioning, the parapsychological functioning of our own brains in order to determine how much of it this is interaction with the environments, with electronics, or with other intelligences that are no longer with us.
I've always been intrigued by the idea with poltergeist activity specifically. Most of the researchers have found that it does center around one person. The common belief for a long time is that this person would usually be of prepubescence, or in some cases, it would be at like a menopausal state where there is this discharge of archaic or anarchic energy from these people. And in poltergeist cases, a lot of people associate it with ghosts, but most true poltergeist cases have nothing to do with ghost-like activity. It has more to do with door slamming, noises, kind of unintelligible communication, if you will. Maybe I'm misunderstanding that, but from a lot of the stuff I've read, that's what a true poltergeist case evolves and revolves around, is that type of activity. In some cases, it seems that ghosts will be active, but only during those moments. And I wonder if it is us throwing off some kind of electrokinesis. If we are feeding the environment, are we creating the ghost or giving them a template to be seen, at those moments when our energy is at its peak? Or, you know, is it the ghosts that are creating this epileptic kind of energetic seizure of energy that affects us? And you know, I mean, which came first, the chicken or the egg in these kind of instances?
Yeah, and I think in parapsychology, you know, you'll see that there's a definite separation between that poltergeist activity, which is that, as you described, electrokinetic activity, and apparitions. It's not very common for them to happen at the same time. In the same case or the same situation. And there's haunting RSPK or recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, where there will be apparitions present, but that's not considered to be a normal or the usual state of things. And I think you're absolutely right. And I know we talked a little bit about this on social media a few weeks ago. And I had mentioned Bachelor's Grove because I had listened to one of your shows, and I can't remember the subject of what it was that led me to write to you. But I had talked about Bachelor's Grove and the fact that, for example, Charles Williams, who's doing this great documentary about the Madonna of Bachelor's Grove photo taken by Judy Hoff. That they had gone to film there last year, and they had been in the cemetery for many, many hours throughout the day talking about the Madonna of Bachelor's Grove, the woman in white that sat on the tombstone, and Judy captured her photo. And like I said, I've studied Bachelor's Grove for 30 years now. I have never met anyone who actually saw this woman in white at Bachelor's Grove. And after that day, there were three separate people that went to Bachelor's Grove that night after hours and saw this woman in white in the cemetery. And it just makes you wonder, like, what is going on there? That, I mean, is it because all of these people were there, talking about this apparition or this entity, expecting to see her, talking about her, that she somehow got the energy to materialize? or she tapped into their psyches for that energy to materialize? Or was it all of their interest in it that projected that image onto the environment, you know, that other people right. would actually objectively see? So, you know, that's just one instance at Bachelor's Grove. The other one I mentioned earlier was that my friend Carl has taken photos of this figure that resembles Slender Man, you know, this 9-10 foot tall guy in a suit with long arms. No one had ever talked about seeing an image like this or an apparition like this at Bachelor's Grove until the Slender Man meme started to appear on the internet. And then all of a sudden, people started to talk about seeing this figure at Bachelor's Grove, mm-hmm. and people have taken photos of this figure at Bachelor's Grove. So there's definitely some interaction between what we expect, you know, what we know, what we expect, and there's got to be, and maybe our equipment, like you said, cameras, recorders, abilities, psychic abilities of people that are interacting at these places. But it's so many levels, so many different levels that are working with each other. And how to make sense of it all. I don't even know where to start.
We did. I know we had, you're having him to your para conference in October. We had Lloyd Auerbach on the show, one of the first episodes we did here on Beyond the Darkness, and talked about making monsters, thought form creations, creating tulpas, and these machinations of our imagination coming to life.
It was probably the show that I listened to
right.
that. Yeah.
Right. And I think people don't give ourselves enough of credit. And even, you know, my journey over 12 years of doing the show, a lot of my perspectives of the paranormal have shifted. My beliefs in what we are experiencing. I don't know that we're always dealing with, you know, dead grandpa or grandma, I believe that there might be other aspects at play. And I think a lot of it has to do with the people involved in the story and in the location. You know, because there are, with expectations, there are places that are going to have this. You know, the Zozo phenomena is a great one
right.
compliance with the Ouija board. Here you've got this phenomena where it spells itself out Z-O-Z-O, which gives you this rainbow swinging effect on the board, which has always been part of its history. Now, people have heard about Zozo, and all of a sudden their board starts spelling it out. Is that their own consciousness creating this? Because there are others who don't just, it's not part of their lexicon, and they never encounter Zozo. Where does Zozo come from? You know, that's what it starts playing itself out with. And that's why I think the paranormal is so frustrating to some. And it's very easy. Listen, there are days, and Tim and I go round and round about this, of flipping roles from Mulder to Scully, where one day I'm the true believer, the next he's.
Right.
We're constantly kind of trying to keep each other in check with, this just doesn't
right.
sound legitimate. And I think that's where all the frustration comes in with the paranormal, is because we don't have an objective way to view these things. And, you know, we can hypothesize, we can throw out these ideas and beliefs and test some of them to a degree. But in testing them, a lot of times we're influencing the outcome because of preconceived notions of what we think will or won't happen already. So it makes this field so fragile, I think is maybe the best term.
Right.
I took a photograph many years ago. The late Richard Crowe was the first ghost tour I ever went on in Chicago, and you knew him as well. And they took us to Hull House in Chicago. And, you know, I knew nothing of the stories, but I took a photograph, and it was the first ghost photograph I ever took. I caught a vision of a hand reaching towards the window. Reaching back at me. And it was really cool. It wasn't a reflection of my own hand because none of it was impeded by the camera. But it was there. But here I got something with no expectations of what I was going to capture. I literally just thought the interior was really cool looking because it was all throwback. It looked very much like it was just, that house has been sealed since that date and has never been opened. That's kind of that feel. So I took that photograph, and here I catch this ghostly hand reaching back at me. But here I had no expectations, yet I still captured phenomena.
It's so true. And it's so funny that you mentioned Hull House, because of course we go there every night on our tours, you know, every night for the last 15 years now. And the first and only experience I've ever had, being a paranormal investigator now for 31 years, growing up in a haunted house, the only ghost I've ever seen or apparition I've ever seen, an image I've ever seen. I still don't know what it was, but it was after bringing a tour group there to Hull House, and which is, you know, known to be haunted. It's believed or claimed that there is a so-called portal in the garden at Hull House. The house was the inspiration for Rosemary's Baby. Mm-hmm. Ira Levin heard about the story of this diabolical infant being brought there in 1913 and wrote Rosemary's Baby based on that. So it's a very historical, you know, supernatural spot. And it was odd. I mean, I went home that night and I woke up at about 4 o'clock in the morning and there was a headless man standing on my chest. And I was, you know, this long time paranormal investigator, very cool, you know, whatever. And I thought, okay, well, this is probably, a waking dream or a sleep paralysis or whatever, because I couldn't move. Guy was standing on my chest. And I said, okay, I'm going to see how long this lasts. And I had the wherewithal to watch the clock radio. And it went on for 14, 15 minutes. And I was very aware of traffic going by outside, husband snoring next to me, or Eva was a baby. She turned it over in her crib across the hall. I heard all this. I was awake the whole time. I was terrified, of course. The whole time I was telling myself, do not, Ursula, tell yourself tomorrow this didn't happen, because this is happening and it's going on and on and on. And, you know, after all of this time went by, you know, and I felt like I was a little kid when you wake up from a nightmare and you try to call out for your mom. That's what I was just trying to just say something, hoping that it would end. And when I finally, you know, said, like, please go, this figure stepped off of my body, didn't even disappear, stepped off my body, and then sort of dissipated.
Now, did you have any other physical sensation from it? Could you feel a pressure or a weight?
I felt pressure, not the pressure of a man standing on me, but I felt pressure, couldn't move. Everything was very audible. As mentioned, I could, hear everything. It was a very warm night in October. I had the window open, you know, curtains blowing. I could feel the breeze coming in. So, you know, a lot of tactile sensation, audible impressions, all of that. But, you know, this bizarre thing that was in the room with me. And to this day, I don't know what it was. You know, I say it's the first time I saw a ghost, but that was not the impression I had. The impression I had was that it was an image that I was seeing, that I was, that it was some sort of image, like a something projected, something that was like almost like a hologram. And where did it come from? Is it someone that was in our apartment that somehow I tapped into that one time? Was it something that I brought home with me from Hull House, which is this place known for people bringing spirits home with them, attachments home with them? You know, was someone trying to communicate with me in this visual way? You know, I don't know. To this day, I don't know what it was. But I call it the time I brought the ghost home from Hull House. But I don't know if that's what it was.
Hmm. As you continue to do this research, have you found yourself waffling back and forth on your belief systems and what creates these experiences?
I find myself growing more and more in my ideas of the possibilities of what they are. I'm sorry, I forget the woman that you said is in the studio with you?
Susan. Right.
I think it was Susan that mentioned that she had picked up an EVP with her own voice.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, she had. We were at Rolling Hills, and she was sitting across from Mark and Debbie Constantino. And if I recall the story properly, they were doing this talk back and forth, and Susan asked something like, "Is this the room where the little girl's spirit is?" And when she played back her recording, you hear her voice say, "Is this the room where the little girl's spirit is?" And when Mark plays back his recording, you hear Susan's voice say, "Is this the room where the little boy's spirit is?" And it's her voice. And it's her voice asking the same question, only on his, you capture her voice asking if it's a boy's ghost. On hers, it was, "Is this a girl's ghost?" So that was a flat out manipulation of the words. And that was, I was right there for that. That was a really bizarre exchange.
Yeah. I had a really intense EVP like that from EVP when I had visited with Michael Esposito, Daniel Reuter, Colleen Nada, the people that I was working with here in Chicago. We had gone out there, and I posted this on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com, Ursula Bielski's my account. There's all my EVPs are on there. There was, it was about 2 years ago, 3 years ago that we had gone to Bachelor's Grove one afternoon. And I had actually brought a Sans trumpet, this aluminum cone that they used to use in Sans back in the spiritualist era, which mediums believed would sort of focus the voice of the spirits. So I started using this as an experiment, collecting EVP, and it really seems to help with developing EVP. And so I had it there, and we were at the big Fulton Stone, the big famous stone there. And Daniel Reuter and Michael Esposito and myself are just talking. You can hear us chatting and laughing. And then all of a sudden you hear Michael's voice clear his throat very roughly. And it says, "Daniel, I'm talking to you now, Daniel." And then immediately after you hear us just having our conversation, nothing interrupted. Something had used Michael's voice to send that very, very gruff message onto my laptop to record that. And the same, very similar when we talk about the ghost conferences going back. You are at our second ghost conference. The first one was attended by like 50 people, and it was at the Congress Hotel, very haunted place, you know, Michigan Avenue in Chicago. And our star speaker was Mark Macy, who was one of the founders of the World ITC movement institution, kind of one of the pioneers of EVP research and ITC research. So he was our speaker there, and I talked a lot with him before and after the conference. And I was one of those many researchers that, you know, I loved trying to collect EVP, but not in my house, because right. I did not want, you know, didn't know it was in my house. And then after speaking with Mark, and Mark talking about that it's not as much, you know, trying to communicate with ghosts in our house, but or wherever we are, but trying to build this bridge of communication between the physical world and whatever world they're living in. And then explain this very disciplined way of trying to do that, where you set up the same recording equipment every day and you turn it on at the same time every day. And like we talked about earlier, you kind of establish this rapport, not only with the equipment, but with whatever's there. So you warm up to each other, sort of. And so I decided I was going to start to do this, to try to contribute to this building of this bridge between us and the other side. So at 11 o'clock every morning, I had a tape recorder that I would turn on, you know, the old school tape recorder with the cassette player. And every morning at 11, I would just spend 10 minutes just saying, like, I'm here, and I just, you know, wanted to talk to whoever's on the other side. I want to help to make this bridge. And I did it for about 2 weeks, and I didn't get anything. And Mark said, just do, you know, a few minutes a day. Don't do, like, a long period of time. And after 2 weeks, this one day, I asked, I'm trying to talk to you. I just want to speak to someone. If there's anyone that wants to talk to me, just let me know that you're here. And that day, when I play the recording back, after I say, I just want to know if there's anybody here, in my voice, you hear, "We are right here." It freaked me out so bad.
Right.
It was the weirdest thing I've ever experienced, and experienced a lot of weird things over the years. But that hearing your own voice on a recording is so much stranger than hearing, you know, some mysterious disembodied voice that you don't know who it is.
Right, hearing your own voice. I've had that experience on a few occasions where it's my voice answering back, and I'm in a room with four people, and we're all standing in front of each other, and they know I didn't respond, but you hear my voice fire back. It shakes the whole paradigm, right? What are we doing? Who are we really communicating with? What are these things that we're dealing with. The book will be out later this year, The Ghost in You, Poltergeists, Electrokinesis, and Phantasms of the Living. As a matter of fact, I'm willing to bet it'll probably be out by about the time of the Chicago Para Conference, and you probably get a good copy of it there and an autographed copy if you come on out and join us. Ursula, thank you for joining us. Tell people again, how can they get tickets to the Para Conference?
Absolutely. They can just go to ChicagoHauntings.com and just follow. There's a big poster on the site. Just click on that and it'll take you right to the ticket site. We can get tickets for one day, 2 day, VIP passes for the whole gamut, ghost tours, ghost hunts, our big party, and to meet you and Tim and all of our great speakers and guests that are coming.
Yeah, go check out the website to get a full list of all of the remarkable speakers that they're going to have on hand, celebrities that will be stopping in and joining and be a part of the show. It's always a great time, a lot of fun, good party, good people, and a lot of knowledge being shared. So make sure you make your way out this year to the Chicago Paracon. You can find information again at ChicagoHauntings.com. Remember, I'll be hosting Coast to Coast AM tomorrow night, Saturday, from midnight till 4 a.m. I hope you'll join us. Find more information at coasttocoastam.com. Or you can listen to the show as it's live streamed right here from our home studios at knsiradio.com. That's knsiradio.com. We want to thank our sponsors this evening on the show, Audible and Amazon Company. Remember, today's podcast was brought to you by Audible, where you can get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial just by going to audibletrial.com/darkness. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And I'll recommend it. If you like Star Wars and you're a nerd like me, then check out Star Wars Aftermath, Empire's End by Chuck Wendig. It's on there and available in what I'm listening to. Also, we want to thank our good friends at Casper Mattress. And again, if you would like to take $50 off the purchase price of a mattress, you can do it by visiting Casper Mattress. CasperTrial.com. That's CasperTrial.com/darkness. And then use promo code 50SLEEP. That's 50SLEEP. And you'll be able to save $50 off the price of any of their mattresses. You can help support our show by advertising and visiting with our advertisers. That's it for this evening. Make sure to check out George Norrie and Coast to Coast tonight when his guest is Leslie Feldman, professor of political science at Hofstra University. Leslie Feldman will discuss how television shows like The Twilight Zone and even The Beverly Hillbillies addressed important discussions about human nature, the American dream, class struggles, and our place in the universe, followed by 2 hours of open lines. That's all on the best in overnight talk radio, Coast to Coast AM. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. Special thanks to Ursula Bielski, our guest this evening. As you've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio, this is Beyond the Darkness.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.